Hey, folks.
Hello.
How
Hi.
are you? Sorry. Sorry, I'm running a little late.
That's fine.
Does anyone have the link to the WolfCon submissions?
It's through feed loop. I can get it for you quick.
Awesome. Y'all are great. Cool. Well, you want to maybe just spend a little bit getting this filled out, and we can call that a productive meeting.
Sure.
Cool. All right. We're gonna dive right in. I don't mind. All right. Can you do like comma separated here, or do they are they looking for just one like point person?
Your email address, and then you can add co-speakers later.
Okay. Perfect. All right. Roll.
Person who gets yelled at when system goes down.
And other times also.
And other times also. That's falls under duties as assigned.
Session title. And I'm just gonna type something in and we can workshop it.
Good.
Introducing the minimally viable develop. Should I call it a dip or spell it out?
I would probably spell
Yeah. Something like
My
that.
understanding is the, sure, yeah. My understanding is too is with feed loop is that once you submit it, you're automatically created an account and it's put under your presenter portal, so you can go in and actually edit it after the fact too. So.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, the system's a lot more flexible than the other one.
Maybe we won't. And it occurs to me that minimally viable maybe should be hyphenated. Don't know. Session description. Okay. At the 2025 WolfCon, the three, I'm just gonna write again, just write something down. Y'all can tell me what y'all think. Governing councils decided to pursue the implementation of a minimally viable development initiative proposal. As defined in the what was it called? Community
Development CD.
community-driven development framework. Let's see, can't believe the product. Council has been working on outlining what this process will has been, I don't know. Well, like I said, be the purpose of this session is to introduce the minimally viable dip and I'll go ahead and explore future possible limitations. I don't know. Okay. What should I change?
Everything.
This is again more of other duties as assigned as a system library.
You actually considered a librarian?
I am, which never in a million years did I ever think I would be a librarian, if I'm being honest.
Sorry. Like, I'll talk it. I think no one in IT here is considered a librarian. We have like Jen Cold and that are librarians that are in data automation and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But we don't have anyone in library IT that's a librarian except for Simeon. He's RAUL. But yeah, I had friends make fun of me when I first started working at the library. I was like, why are you working at a library? You hate reading. You don't like books. You can't spell worth shit.
Love books, but I cannot spell.
I'm like, I like computers and they have lots of computers. So,
Yeah, it what happened at A&M was I was a software developer there for like a decade, and they did this awful thing. I don't know if y'all heard about it or not, but they consolidated all of their IT staff. And so it used to be the case that every college kind of had their own IT unit that was like in the reporting line of that college. And they pulled them all into the central unit, and it was just a big cluster. I mean, it was awful. It was very poorly planned and rushed. And I mean, just to speak candidly, that the money wasn't there to make it happen, and around that time there was this was about this point is about 5 years ago. There was this big push to kind of retain institutional knowledge within the library, because they were hemorrhaging people, and I was getting a master's degree right around then, and so they just kind of threw together a position, and they were like, "Hey, do you want to stick around at the library?" And I did not like the look of what was going on in IT, and it meant I got to like keep my office, and it just seemed like a pretty sweet deal, and it's worked out great. So,
So it's only 5 years that years that you work in the library.
well, I was working for the library the whole time, but as a software
Ah, okay,
developer,
some kind of outsourced.
I mean, we were embedded. Like my office was in the library. My reporting line went up through the dean of the library. I felt very much part. I mean, I felt like I was part of the library. But then when they were gonna pull us out, I just prefer. I liked working for the library, so I was like, I'll stay with you guys.
Mean, the Cornell does the same thing in cycles, and we're in a downsizing cycle right now. So we've always like from the entire time that I've been, well, actually my entire life, so almost 50 years, Cornell has had a central CIT office. And central IT is in charge of the central systems, and they were originally in charge of like communications. And at the time when I first became an employee at Cornell 20 some years ago, they had shoot, was it Bear Access, which was a bad name, but it was this homewritten like Java application that you had to install that had sidecar for authentication and all this other stuff. But they've always had their own central IT office, and then every single department had their own individual departmental IT office. And central IT will go through like this expansion and contraction. When they contract, the individual departments will start building out their own IT departments, and then they'll look around like, oh, wait, we have duplication of services. Like all these departments are doing support for departmental PCs. We could do that centrally. And they grab everyone from the external departments and pull them to the central department. And we're kind of in that right now where they're pulling in other departments and into central IT and restructuring central IT. But if, I mean, to be kind of blunt, like Cornell central IT is always disorganized. They're constantly restructuring over and over and over again. And yeah, it gets wonky. And then right now we're also in the midst of another bad name. Techie should not be allowed to pick out acronyms. It's called CEMI, CEMI. It's supposed to be like, oh, you can see me, sort of thing. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Come
But
on.
yeah, but they're going through and reevaluating basically every major service on campus, and they want to replace the central organization hub or software for the entire campus. So they're going to replace the Bursar system, PeopleSoft, Workday, all of that with one massive system that encompasses everything. And then we have all these custom systems that have been built up over the years that were never replaced because, hey, they do exactly what we want. They're looking at replacing those. And at the same time, they're going through and like, oh, we have Slack and Teams. Well, we have a Microsoft 360 subscription, so everyone now has to use Teams. You have no choice. We're not paying for this. So yeah, it's weird. Like Cornell, yeah. And
I
then
think
5 years, they'll blow up again.
at the heart of that, what at least what I saw at A&M was the mistake in reasoning that empowers people to do that consolidation is this idea that IT human resources are fungible. They discount the domain knowledge that goes into people being effective at doing their job in a specific role. So I was a full stack developer, right? You look at that and it's like, oh, well, he writes Java applications. Well, this transportation app over here is written in Java. So
Yeah.
why do we have five different groups of Java developers? We'll just have all. But I remember the first time I sat in a library meeting, and I had a little pad of paper, and I was like, I'm gonna write down everything I don't understand, and I'm gonna go Google it afterwards. And it was like 10 pages of notes where I'm just like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. And knowing what all of those things were was instrumental to me being able to plan and effectively implement software for the library. And you can't just grab up a random Java developer and be like, write this application successfully, understand your user needs, and they don't think about that aspect of it at all.
The
Well, because
complicated thing in developing is not the programming language or framework, but the domain knowledge.
Yes.
Because the other the, one of the other things is too is a lot of university developers, and I they may be getting that here a little bit, is that they're not only a developer, but they're a PO. Like they have to collect the requirements from their customer and understand how it's supposed to function when they write the application. I mean, you can have, I mean, that's kind of how Folio works. Like the EPAM developers are kind of blind to how libraries work. They go off the tickets in that. So you can have that model. It's a little, sometimes more difficult, but you need to have the POs. You need to have that interface
It
model.
puts so much pressure on the POs to like
Yes.
to which is fine. Like if you have the personnel to do that with the expertise to do that, I do believe that you can have an interface between developers and customers that works. But we weren't built that way, and you can bet your bare asses that nobody was talking about hiring a bunch of POs to make this work. Like
Exactly.
that wasn't the plan, and so I don't know. Anyway, you could easily listen to me complain about this for the next 2 hours if y'all don't stop it.
That's fine. It's safe, man. That is one thing that IT here, CIT has gotten is I think they do realize they need that interface layer. So they do have like project managers. And when you do ask the central dev groups for work, you have to submit basically a detailed proposal as if you were a PO. And you're responsible for ensuring that they understand what you're doing, what you need. But yeah. Have the everyday person do that
I went to go put in a ticket with Central IT when this whole thing was starting to
one.
just kind of see like, well, what would it be like for us to get some application development out of this unit? And the entire forum was like, what web page do you need? What content do you need? And I was like, I mean, we're building web apps over here. This is not I don't need a web page, I need some software development.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that one they do know. If you need a web page built, there's one group you go to. If you need a module built for like a Drupal page or WordPress page, is another group you go to. That's kind of where the library is thankfully kind of insulated because the applications that we work on are so unique that there is no duplication across campus that our devs, no one else is useful. Except for our devs on that software. And they're so tied up with that software that they don't have time to do anything else.
We
So.
were able over time. I mean, basically what we did a really good job, and I have to hats off to my managers and like all the folks in the library that were kind of more on the technical side. We over the course of years were very aggressive in articulating exactly what the technical needs of the library were, so that every time we ever got into any kind of meeting, that meme with Homer slowly backing into the bush. Every meeting kind of ended like that, where we're like, "Well, look, if you guys want it, these are the 40 applications that we take care of," or, and every single time they're like, "You guys got this. This is it's fine."
You guys deal with it. I would go grab it, but yeah. We actually have a Lego build of that.
Ah, nice. Yeah. All right. So we have this what this process will be. I'm just thinking that this future tense may be not appropriate at by the time we get to WolfCon. Like hopefully it's more like what it is than what it will be. I don't know. What do y'all think?
First of all, I think that we should explain in one or two sentences what the DIP actually wants to achieve. It's not clear, and then maybe it's also clear what this process will be. I mean.
At the WolfCon, three governing councils decided to pursue the implementation of minimally viable.
And it's maybe a bit I'm not sure. Did the three councils decide that we want to pursue the minimal viably DIP, or did we rather, I mean, as three councils decide that we want to pursue the CDDF in general,
I think
and did the product council decided to pursue the MV DIP? I'm not sure at the moment, but and maybe it's not really important for the description, how it really was, but
I think that what we have written here is included in a decision to pursue the CDDF. I think that I am definitely expressing it more narrowly, though. I could be open to either one. It felt like there would be more explaining to do if I started with the CDDF and then talked about how that was related to the DIP. I guess it might be why I did that, but let's see.
I don't know. I don't know. But if they're from the other councils, there will be also sessions about parts of the CDDF. For example, from the technical council about the this survey, how much development costs there are for each modular app.
That's a good question.
So if. If we begin, or if you state that the councils decided to pursue the CDDF and then the PC decided
Yeah.
to look into the minimal viable DIP, then it's clear, okay, well, this is within a larger context.
Yeah. An important component. Okay. CDDF. Component of the CDDF was the development initiative proposal. A process by which intended development could be expressed and let's see, I do want to talk about that. Process by which intended development could be expressed and resources. Yeah, that's working. I hate it when I can't think of the words. All right, let's see. What is the minimally viable DIP, or what is the DIP? The DIP is, well, we've written all this before.
Doesn't say I can never think of the words
Yeah.
until 5 minutes later.
There we go. A lightweight community-driven mechanism for identifying, coordinating, and documenting significant development initiatives within Folio. Does that sound good? There's the DIP, period. All right. How do we feel about this? Is it better? Feels better than it was a second ago. I'll just read it out loud real fast. At the 2025 WolfCon, the three governing councils decided to pursue the implementation of the Community Directed Development Framework, the CDDF. An important component of the CDDF was the Development Initiative Proposal, DIP. The DIP is a lightweight, community-driven mechanism for identifying, coordinating, and documenting significant development initiatives within Folio. The Product Council has been working on outlining a minimally viable implementation of the DIP as a first phase in adoption. The purpose of this session is to introduce the minimally viable DIP and explore future possible implementations.
Sounds good.
Learning objectives. Understand the DIP process. Identify possible areas. Well, I don't need to capitalize on this. Areas for improvement. I'm not writing in German. You guys capitalize so much. Areas for
Yeah,
improvement.
well, if you're only writing headlines in English, it's the
No.
opposite.
That is true. And these days, most writing does seem to be just headlines.
Yeah, that's right.
90% clickbait.
Wait till you see number seven. Okay. Actually, forget number seven. I'm trying to come up with number three. Identify possible areas for improvement. What do I also we gotta do? We're gonna answer questions.
I thought you would write possible, identify possible areas of adoption or implementation, or I mean, you said you wrote future possible implementations. I guess it's about pilot development things.
Oh yeah, like
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
Hit the question mark or some suggested ones in there too.
The process of adoption. Yeah, so yeah, we do want to talk about pilot like pi piloting the dip. Though we might again like we I guess we could change this over time, but it could be the case that a pilot for this has actually occurred by the time we get to WolfCon. Maybe po possibly. So that would be something we could go over here, but understand the mechanics of the DIP process. Explain the pilot phase. I don't know. Does that work? Okay.
The one thing I, and it's kind of related, the one thing I did kind of suggest, I'm not sure if they're going to go with it or not, but shoot, which group is it now? The RMC subgroup is I suggested maybe using the dips as the method for exposing what work was done in a flower release as
Yeah.
part of notes instead of actually going to Jira the way we are now.
That would work if we had 100% participation with it, and which I doubt we will have as long as it's an opt-in thing.
We might. And some of the other thing, and the reason why I say we might is it's kind of where this group and that group are kind of coinciding, is because one of the things that we're talking about the last meeting was actually having somebody from PC or multiple people from PC going through and kind of grabbing the individual JIRAs and looking through them, pulling the information out to help with the POs creating release notes. And that's the reason why I thought, well, wait, this could actually possibly work, because instead of doing that, they could just create dips for each one of those things, link the JIRA tickets to it.
Yeah.
It would kind of solve both problems at once. You would have this tracking structure, but then you would also have something you can use as a reporting structure for the release notes, and also another entity that you could tie things like, because they were talking about the YouTube videos that are being released and on work. I'm like, you could tie those directly to the dip. Like, they could be links on it of as things are progressing and they're doing the demos, you could tie those directly to the dip as a kind of a working document for the entire thing. So,
Yeah.
we'll see.
That's a cool idea. I think you've identified a possible area for future improvement. Okay.
That sounds like a developer.
Yeah. All right, what are we thinking? Is this do we I mean, I don't think this is complex. It's either balanced or accessible. So the difference being the level of prerequisite knowledge that you need to engage with a session.
Say balanced.
Okay.
I think having some working knowledge of how Jira functions and how dev functions on the back end would be helpful to understand what the process is and how it will interact with that process.
Hybrid
Yeah.
short session. I definitely
I
think we
think
want a
it's the
hybrid
third
with
option.
in person.
Person or it's the second or either second or third. I mean the you're the primary or the one who is submitting it. Are you gonna be there in place in Prague?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would do that.
So I'm looking forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, that'll be
And
good.
now, I mean, I think the question is, if the one submitting is there in person, it's the second, and if not, it's the third one.
Okay.
At least I understood it like that, but I'm not sure.
There's also this panel session right here. I don't think we want to run it as a panel. It doesn't.
No, I think the difference between two and three is that
Oh, yeah, I see.
you have either you have are in person there or you need to have a moderator.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, in person hybrid. Oh, in person moderator. So I am so okay. Wait, so
Yeah,
we
so
don't need a moderator. Yeah. Okay, so it's the second one.
I
Right?
think so.
Okay. That's a little confusing. They need to define what a moderator is in this context.
I can say something to them. I think this did come up during one of the WolfCon things, and if they change these, it messes up the back end somehow.
Okay.
I
Yeah, probably
can
you
just
can't,
tell it.
like, they've already gotten submissions, sort it in a certain way, and then you change it and it sorts it differently.
Yeah, I can ask Alec. Let me just take a screenshot, because then I'll, whoops. I'm not going to come on. There. Screenshot. Now I remember what I'm talking about. I do remember something coming up with those options, and Alec was saying that if they changed it, it'd mess up the back end somehow. But I can't remember if it was removing or I think it was removing and adding. Changing the description may not mess with it, so I'll ask.
Yeah, the timing sounds right. 50 minutes total, 40 minutes plus 10 minutes QA. That sounds pretty good. Hybrid full input. Yeah, I think this feels right. You select it in person, hybrid full or virtual. Please select which type is full session. Regular standard PowerPoint presentation, 1 to 3 presenters.
Yeah, that's the first one.
Yeah.
And then
Okay.
related projects.
Folio. And that's it. I heard that OLF reached out to TDL about, are y'all familiar with the Vireo application?
No.
It's one that,
Vireo.
yeah, Vireo is a document submittal application that we at Texas A&M was, hugely influential in building for the Texas Digital Libraries Organization. And it was one of the first projects I worked on was building the version 4 of Vireo. And it's a pretty cool application. And I heard that there was some talk about them coming into the OLF umbrella, which would be neat. OLF is really growing.
Do you think that part of that might be because of the desire for CDL?
CDL.
Controlled digital lending.
Like being able to co coordinate across all of these different applications and like one ecosystem. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Oh no, basically what it is it would be it's a file server that has digital copies of books, journal articles, that sort of thing. But there you have to have a component within the library management system, and it's really tricky because it's based on country and copyright law. That
Sure.
basically you let's say of Mice and Men, your library has 5 copies. You have a digital copy on a server. You check out the digital copy from the server, and the library has to pull the physical copy off the shelf. Are they not
Sure,
allowed to
yeah.
check out the physical copy? And there's a large desire with libraries to have this so that it makes their collections more accessible to their patrons. But the problem is they really haven't found a good platform to host the digital content and then also tie it to the library management system. And there's kind of people going in different directions. I was kind of wondering if maybe the step going with this group is that they have a really viable server system, a very viable like data warehouse system.
This so Texas Digital Libraries mostly at this point is a like a nonprofit hosting organization to host digital repositories for people. So they host DSpace.
Right.
That's kind of their bread and butter. But then I also host this Vireo application, which is used as like a thesis and dissertation submittal system, right?
Okay.
But what works well about it is it empowers and it's used by a lot of folks. I think Johns Hopkins uses it. I mean, it's used outside of Texas for sure. And what's neat about it is that it really empowers an institution to be the institutional repository. So the pipeline allows for you to get these things submitted and do like the whole like, you can add advisors to like kind of comment, and it allows this back and forth on your submission as you're kind of going through the submittal process. But then at the termination of the process, it'll put a copy in your digital re repository. And
Oh,
so
cool.
it allows you to funnel the documents and really kind of hang on to them, which is the incentive for the library to be involved with it because we like, having all those these theses and dissertations accessible.
Mean that, and that makes sense too, because I know there's a lot of, along with the CDL model, there's also a lot of libraries that are trying to get into open access. And Folio does have the open access component, but you still have to have those documents hosted
Yeah.
somewhere. So that would actually give people a platform to do self-publishing of digital content,
Yeah.
which would be really, really cool. I mean, yeah, I mean, either way, it's a good step forward. There's so much stuff going on. It's not funny. I'm glad I'm not a metadata librarian.
I worked with them a lot during my work on Vireo, because yeah, so much of what we were doing was getting the metadata right on the, and that was another thing is having this be a standardized process allowed us to attach quality metadata to these theses and dissertations as they're going through. But then you have to figure out what quality metadata means.
Exactly, and that. But you could also, depending, like if they're thinking of, if it falls under the same OLAF umbrella, there's a very po high possibility that it could be tied tighter to Folio, and then it doesn't have to deal with the metadata. The metadata is dealt with directly in Folio, and then there's just an interconnection between the two and pa lets it pass back and forth. But yeah. Is there anything else?
Do we think that there's anything other than open source development on this list that this pertains to?
Just do other none as you had checked, because you could say this goes with communication, community development.
Project governance.
Yeah. I'd say that falls under other.
Do you consent to be recorded? Stream live on TikTok.
Oh, God, no, please.
Do you or any other presenters require any special accommodations either for accessibility or room setup? I am not aware of that.
I require a coffee bar and candy accessible at all times.
Do you have any questions or issues you would like?
You're in Prague, you require free beer. There
Yes. Oh,
we go.
that would be awesome.
Only bad thing is I don't drink beer.
All right.
I don't really drink at all.
Martin, what is your email?
Martin, wait, I'll write in the chat.
Okay. Yeah, and would you mind, Thomas, also? And I'll try to find Charlotte's. Let's see. Community directed development. Pretty sure she's going to want to participate. How did she spell it? We got it. Company next data. Does she list her pronouns? She does not. It does not look like that.
No.
Okay. Job title, product owner, I think. Is that? Oh, no. Whoa. She's got quite the title. Product manager, lead product owner. Manager, lead, owner. I'm not gonna fill this stuff in. Oh
I think
man, we need bios.
now you can just go ahead and skip it.
Really? Can we like add these later?
Because once you as when you add a co-speaker, it also adds an account for them, and then she should be able to go in
It's
and
not
everything.
mandatory, no? No, it
Is it?
doesn't look like it. Okay. Yeah, I'm just gonna do the mandatory fields. So we have Charlotte Witt, and all right, now I'm gonna start adding y'all.
You only have to do the ones, the required fields. So it's just the email, first name and last name. And I think that's it. Because again, like once this is, okay, I guess company, job title. Once these are added, it creates accounts for all the speakers, and there's a speaker portal that you can go into and edit your information with
Okay,
data.
perfect. Thomas, do you list pronouns?
Nope. My
Okay.
pronouns are I don't and care. You can call me whatever
Right.
the heck you want. I don't care.
Cool. Company, Cornell. What's your job title?
Folio application manager.
Like that. Okay. I think we got everything for you. Right. Martin. You get that right? Yeah. All right.
The company, I put it in the chat. Just
Okay.
copy paste it.
Cool. And your job title?
Folio migration lead.
That sounds like a stressful job, Martin.
The moment I hope in at least in September it won't be anymore.
Okay, I wonder if they let us add additional speakers later because I'm not. I mean, if we look at, oh, where is this? How do I get back to? We look at the folks involved, I can see Yana wanting to participate, but a lot of these folks have not been very actively participatory in recent meetings. So I'll reach out to Yana and see if she wants to be added. If it doesn't let us add a speaker afterwards, I'll reach out to the folks who are planning this and see if we can get her at it.
Yeah, you can either ping Jennifer or Alec. They are kind of the main touch points for the system.
Okay.
But I can also ping them too. But as I said, my understanding is that yes, once you
Sorry.
submit this, you should actually get information to set up an account and you can go in and edit it over and over again. Oh no, you use OwnCloud? Oh, what's wrong with you?
I am experimenting with all sorts of self-hosting.
I used that alone cloud for a while. The main issue I had with it, you have to keep up on updates because if you forget to update the darn thing, it's a bear to skip it from one version to another. Like
Yeah.
it you can lose data, it can scramble. I also had issues with plugins. I mean, granted, this was quite a few years ago, but like I just like eh.
Oh, I already had it. Dang it.
So I actually ended up adding a bunch more services to replace OwnCloud, but I like them a lot better because they're more specific. Have you heard of Paperless?
I have.
I like Paperless, especially if you have access to an AI model, local AI model. You can send your documents to that, and it will do some auto tagging and description for you. But yeah, I really do like paperless. I use that for my electronic filing cabinet. And I find it easier to organize things in there than I did with OwnCloud. And I don't use the calendar. I just use Google Calendar. And there was other things I used, like the image thing, which it matches a lot better with that. Their face recognition model is insanely good. But yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I go through seasons where I'm like really into getting all this stuff set up, and then I mean like right now it's all chugging away great. I have you seen Audio Bookshelf?
Yes.
Yeah, I got that running. I'm using MB. That's working great for like a media server. I also have Navidrome to do subsonic mu music server. And then Symphonium on all my family's phones to connect up to that server, and
Nice.
so the music streaming is working great. I'm really trying to. A lot of it is I have teenagers, and I am in this modern digital age. I don't know. I'm like Big Brother 100%. Like I don't give them any digital freedom. Like I'm like all up in their business. And so I'm like, no, you can't have Spotify. You can use my music streaming service. You can't, I'm not signing you up on all these, YouTube and all this stuff. You can, watch videos on our stuff. And I figured that's the easiest way for me to make sure that they're not getting involved But and you know what? It still doesn't work. They still figure out ways around all of it, but
Oh,
I'm
no,
trying.
my 10-year-old niece knows how to get past the parental controls and get onto YouTube. I have, let's see, what do I have right now? So my Dell web server is running 72 total containers. Frigate's running three, but that's normal. That's Frigate. That's the connector for my Waze cameras, and that's the actual management software. My media server is running 23 containers. So primarily what I run for media is Plex, but I do have Audio Bookshelf. I did try the, I think it's Audacity, and a few others. I was playing with Jellyfin, and I have to admit, I really, really, really like Jellyfin. But right now, they did something with their database. First of all, they use a SQLite database, which is horrible. Like they should use ProQuest or something else of that nature. But I have 1,500 TV shows series that I have in there, and episodes wise, I have about 20,000.
That's a lot of space.
Yeah, I have two ZFS arrays that are about 70 terabytes a piece. But I'm the digital repository for my entire family. They buy something, they give it to me, it gets ripped and it's put on there, and they stream it from my server because then they can get it from wherever they want. And I have a lot of British stuff and the things of that nature for my brother-in-law. But that's why I was playing with Jellyfin because I'm like, okay, well, I really like the interface. I can customize it more. But right now, a scan on my library takes 2 days. It's ridiculous because of things. But yeah, I have a whole bunch of stuff running on there. I book lore for magazines and ebooks.
Have you
I
tried
have.
Envy?
I have. I used to use them a while back. I wasn't massively impressed with them, but I might swing back and try them again.
I like it a lot. I tried Jellyfin, and what I didn't like about it was that it doesn't have the application support. So MBS focused a lot on getting approved applications on like all the different platforms, you know. So there's a Samsung MB app, and like, you know, so you could get it on your smart TV and on your phone and all that stuff. And I like the so the clients I like a lot for MB. The backend management is I don't have a problem with it. I could imagine it being better, I suppose, but
I was to say, when was the last time you tried Jellyfin,
pretty recently, but I did I
Oh,
that
okay.
was my issue with it wasn't the back end, it was
It
the
was the front.
I couldn't find the app the clients for it.
I don't know about I don't know about Apple ecosystem, but I do know on Android because there is a Android Jellyfin app that I was able to download from Play Store for both my TVs and my phone because I have Android TV on all my TVs. So I was using it that way. And also, oddly enough, Home Assistant saw my Jellyfin server and tried to connect to it right away. So
Oh,
it's like,
that's
oh, you
cool.
have a Jellyfin server. Let me connect to it and add integrations. I don't know. Like I bought a Plex pass years ago, like when it was $100, and it's a lifetime pass. So now that's $400.
They
Yeah.
got you.
So I have all their apps, so I don't have to leave their ecosystem. It's just I like the customization.
Hey, if you got something that works, then
Yeah,
you know.
but then on my other one, I have stuff I use for work. So I use DocKant to manage all my servers. I was using Protainer, but like on my Dell, I have a application called AppFlowey.
I know AppFlowey.
Yeah, I've been running that. I have Bar Assistant, I have Tandr, and I have Mealy for managing recipes. But I also have Penpot installed, and I use that for actually doing mockups for my personal stuff as well as for Folio. And it's nice because I don't have to have any software installed. I just go wherever I want, open up a browser. There it is.
Martin, do you dabble in any self-hosting, or is that too much
No,
like doing
I
work at
really
home?
envy you that you have the time and the nerve to do that. I tried it and I gave up, especially because my family just doesn't. Yeah, they will sabotage it.
I have had stuff unplugged, you know, where they're like, you know, cleaning and stuff, and they're just like, oh, this doesn't matter. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, all my servers are sitting in the corner of my office. No one's allowed to touch them. In fact, I get yelled at it for it because my spouse is like, "Well, you gotta show me how to run this." Like, if you can't, I'm like, you don't understand how difficult it is to manage the
Yeah.
server and how much base knowledge you need. Well, I think if you sit down and show me, I'm like, okay, so I need to explain to you how to set up a ZFS array, how to manage it, how to remove and add and change drives, the entire concept of Z.
My next goal is to invest in some hardware and set up a LLM locally and get that all going, get like a local chatbot. So we'll see how that goes.
Check with some of the Home Assistant community. Are you running Home Assistant at all or no?
I am not. Yeah, I'm not. I wouldn't mind getting into that, but I find that as soon as you go down the home automation route, it gets really expensive because you have to buy all the peripherals that interface with it. And I've been trying to do this in a way where my wife will let me continue doing it. So I'm like, it's as cheap as possible.
I mean, if you already have things like smart bulbs and that, Home Assistant will tie to a lot of the stuff you
But
already
that's what I'm
have.
saying. Like, I have no
You have
smart
none? Oh,
hardware.
okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have pretty much every light bulb that's in a lamp is a smart bulb. I have smart light switches and outlets and all that stuff all over the place.
I mean, I would love to do that, but
Yeah.
alas.
It's expensive. When we move, I've been speccing out. Putting in a new security system and network through Unify's system arch system. And I'm like, ooh, this is pretty, but it's like 6 grand. But yeah, I mean, because I have a Home Assistant, NAN, that does a bunch of different things for stuff around here. But there was something else I was asking before that too, because of it. Oh, YouTube-wise, there's also, have you heard of uTrack and Tube Archivist?
Are those like the ones that back up YouTube and like give you a proxy? Yeah, I have looked into that.
Well, they'll actually both, there's ones that will give you a proxy, but ones that will actually back up YouTube locally. So
Yeah.
you can hold on to YouTube videos. Those are interesting. Especially when people pull content and their tutorials for things that you need.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've got a
I do
bunch
a
of stuff.
lot of I do pull stuff off of YouTube. I have a few programs that will do that. But it's very piecemeal. It's just kind of like I have to decide to like run it. It's not automated in any way.
Oh
So
yeah, mine's the same way, is I have to actually tell it that I want this video over here. And most of it is like people will, you're gonna laugh at this. People will add to YouTube things like the soundtrack to Disney parades and fireworks shows, and I'll grab things like that because they'll have a tendency sometimes to get pulled back down. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, we made it all the way to the hour. Look at us.
Did you submit the CFP?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. The CFP.
I mean the submission for the session.
And then at WolfCon, we will get Martin into setting up a home lab.
Yes.
Yeah,
Who knows what miracles we'll have come up with by then. Yeah.
I know what it
Yeah.
was.
Oh.
Look at the Home Assistant community and the LLMs they're using. There's a lot of people there that are buying cheap Mac minis for like $600
Yeah.
and using those for local language models because they have the unified memory. You can't run massive, massive, massive models, but you can run usually like 20 billion token models fairly easily.
Yeah.
And
It's
for
like
$600.
GPT 3 or 3.5, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right, we'll take it
There's
easy,
a lot.
folks.
Yep. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye.